Session number 13122, Mr. Ron Dinnins, Reel 4.
Mr. Dinnin, Reel 4, what were your first impressions on landing at Bordery, of the village itself and where you were?
Well, my first impression was isolation, really. It was only a hamlet of 7 houses, and there were no inhabitants in sight. For some reason or other, I gathered later that the inhabitants thought we'd come to attack them, and we spent the first day having to look after ourselves before one young man ventured out, and fortunately he could speak English, and I had to then convince him that we had come as friends. And I asked him if he would tell that to his neighbours. The climate there was very bad at that time.
That's September.
In September. The rain had been heavy the night before, and my first job was to find some way of unloading our stores. Fortunately, the Icelanders had a small jetty on wheels which they pushed out into the water, and we started then to unload the stores from the ship. The fjord at that time was pretty high, and it was about half a mile across, and underneath the fjord was laid a cable, a telephone cable, which ran right round the island, and this was one of my duties to ensure the security of this cable. After the first day, the inhabitants came out of their houses, the old style of Norwegian type house, very sloping roof on the houses, and I had to get ashore and find out just where we were going to live. Fortunately, there was one very large store in which would take my 50 men of the detachment. Of course, it was meant sleeping on the floor for all of them. Fortunately, there was water laid on. But apart from that, it was a very bare, bleak situation.
Was it just one floor, or a ground floor, or was it a...
No, this was a large building with 2 floors, obviously used for storing probably potatoes and vegetables and other things like that. The fishermen really had their own stores, but this was obviously used for dry goods. But it was soon put into shape, and the soldiers began to settle in.
Now, how did you get on with the local population? You'd spoken to this first young lad.
Yes. They soon became very friendly indeed, and with the normal approach with a few cigarettes and that sort of thing, we managed to get along very well indeed. There was no enmity or animosity, nothing like that. It was very friendly and very jolly in a way.
Now, there's one rather unusual order of the day that you issued. Could you just explain the background to that and what exactly the whole thing was?
Well, having seen the population generally, I discovered there was a young Nordic looking girl, very pretty girl, aged about 16 or 17. I realized straight away that this was going to be a problem. Having 50 men in a tiny hamlet and one girl, and I felt I had to do something about it. So I remembered generals issuing an order of the day, and I decided that this perhaps was an occasion that I should use this idea. So I issued an order of the day that no soldier was to approach this girl in any way or cause her any embarrassment, otherwise he would be court-martialed.
And did they obey that?
They did. Fortunately, they obeyed my instructions and we had no problems whatsoever.
Now, you'd settled into this storehouse. Now, what about the... I mean, you were there to defend this area.
Yes.
How did you set about making up some defences, or what did you do then?
Well, having got over the problem of removing the stores from the ship, I then began to think about defences. And I had a walk around the area, and fortunately, we found a small hill rising out of the fjord and flat on the top. And I discovered that it was, in actual fact, a very temporary landing place for a light aircraft.
It already was that?
Yes. And I set to work, got the men on digging trenches and sandbag positions. And unfortunately, after a day or two, we were hit by a snowstorm. It was light at first, and the first indication I had of problems was my sergeant came hurrying down and telling me that the men refused to work.
That was because of the snow? That they're...
Yes. But when I had a look at what was going on, very hurriedly, I picked on one particular corporal and asked him to show me why they couldn't work. And he said, well, it's the greatcoats and their waterproof capes, which were fastened down the front, which he said they were a humbug and they couldn't use a pick or a shovel because of the clothing. So I said, well, undo the bottom buttons and just let me see how big the problem is. So I managed to get him to show me, and with a bit of cajoling and a few words with the men, I eventually got them started work again. But I realized I had a problem. Although it was only very light snow at that time, I felt I had to stay with them in order to get the job completed. I did this and finished the job as quickly as possible, promising them a tot of rum at the end of the day.
How did you lay out the defences? Was there any particular pattern you employed? Or was...
Yes, I had to ensure that I could cover any sort of landing should the Germans come sailing down the fjord, and built proper pillboxes with sandbags at each end of this very temporary and rough airfield, and sighted the sections and positions they would take up overlooking the fjord.
What weapons did you have with you? You'd have your rifles.
All we had at that time were our own rifles, and I think it was 4 Bren guns.
Any light mortars?
None at all. We had very little equipment.
Now, shortly after you got there, you got a telephone call about the Royal Marines and bringing 4-inch naval guns up. Could you tell me that story?
Yes. I received a call one morning to meet a colonel of the Marines on the other side of the fjord with the intention, I found out later, that they were going to mount 2 4-inch guns on the side of the fjord. And he would like to come with him to do the actual sighting of the guns. This was carried out with great speed and a well-organized team. And they were only there 72 hours and sailed away after the guns were mounted.
And they were mounted at... Where were they actually set up, the guns?
Their guns were set up on the opposite side of the fjord to where we were, at a place called Wreckers Coley. This building was, in winter, a school, and in the summer, a hotel, which was a very practical way of using such a building. Although the visitors up there were very few. The countryside was very rugged and very raw, and there really wasn't much countryside, attractive countryside, to attract visitors.
So they set up these two guns there. Who was to man the guns?
Well, I understand that some Marines would be coming at a later date to take up the duties of looking after the guns and using them.
But at this stage, they were just left there?
Yes.
Now, I believe you helped also with the provisioning of the Marines, which is unusual.
Yes. I happened to be talking to their second-in-command, and he told me they had been at sea for over 3 months and were getting very low in their provisions. And he asked me if I could help in any way. So I got onto the local storekeepers and was able to supply them with over 300 carcasses of lamb and about 2 tons of vegetables. And they were very welcome and were able to get away without any great problems. And I later received a signal from the Admiral in Reykjavik thanking me for my assistance.
Now, what was a typical day like during this period? Because a day wasn't as we understand it here, was it?
No.
Even then, at that time of the year?
No. We had to adjust ourselves to the conditions, the climatic conditions. The only hours of work were from 10 o'clock in the morning till 2, because the darkness came and we couldn't work at all.
That was proper darkness, not sort of dusk.
No, the darkness used to come very quickly. So we had to, in the morning, get everything done in the dark and be all ready to start work exactly on 10 o'clock.
So what time would you get up then?
We got up normally about 7, got our breakfasts, and...
What would you have for breakfast? I mean, what sort of food supplies did you have?
Well, the rations were fresh rations. The men would get bacon and eggs, that sort of thing.
Supplied by the local community?
No. These were all army rations. We did get them augmented by a two daily delivery of bread, which was important. But otherwise, we got, after about 2 weeks, we got a shipload of fresh vegetables, which unfortunately were on the deck of a very small ship. The result being, all the potatoes and vegetables were ruined by seawater, as it had a pretty rough passage. So we had to adopt the rather unusual situation of using tinned rations for every meal.
What type of tins were they?
Oh, tinned potatoes, tinned peas, tinned beans, that sort of thing. It wasn't too bad, but from a health point of view, it's not a good thing to be eating out of tins all the time.
Could you get anything from the local community?
Yes, there was a good supply of lambs. Lambs were the main source of supply of food for the Icelanders. But we certainly got augmented with fish, with plenty of fish. I myself used to go out practically every evening with this local young man and fish. So the troops got fish and chips as a second course.
So that was, so we're going sort of through the day looking at things. You'd have a breakfast about 8, I see on these notes.
Yes.
And then all the indoor tasks were to be done by 9:30, before the 10 o'clock dawn, if you like.
That's right.
What sort of indoor tasks would that be?
Well, they must clean the hut out, wash down whatever is required, and clear the place up. It was only a hamlet on the side of the fjord, and the only problem was one used to walk in with a mixed on your boots with a mixture of sand and mud, which was a little bit of a problem, but not very serious.
So it was basically tidying the store
where
you were staying.
Yes. One of the first tasks was to build a cookhouse, and we sighted the cookhouse actually in the main street, if it could be called a street. So that enabled us to cater properly for 50 men.
So that there'd be the cookhouse, then you'd have the main store where you all slept.
Yes.
and lived, I suppose.
Yes.
Now, what about, I believe you had one building you took over as a recreation centre, if you like.
Yes, they had one small building which they permitted us to use as a recreation centre. And I actually held a very small and short religious service. All I had was a prayer book. It didn't have any means of singing, except one soldier had a mouth organ, and he managed to use his mouth organ to give us something to sing. And that was the one and only religious service I carried out.
What recreational facilities would you have in that? I mean,
there were virtually nothing. I think there was a dartboard and a draft board, and that was all. There was absolutely nothing really for the troops to do. It was a very big problem, really.
Would they be able to get a drink in there? You know, a pint of beer? Or
there was no drink at all. And
so
later, we found a way that the Icelanders could get cans of beer brought up from Reykjavik. And these the men could purchase from the local store.
So those were your three buildings that in that morning period you keep tidy up,
yeah.
before. Now what about at 10 o'clock? You get on with your outdoor work.
Yes.
That would be the building of the trenches and the positions, would it? Or what else would you be doing between 10
no,
and 2?
That was our main task at that time, to get on with the defence programme. There was nothing much else we could do, and it became a rather problem of keeping the men occupied, especially in the evenings.
So let's just go through. So you'd work outdoors from 10 till Till two. Would you have a break at all, or would that be 4 hours solid work?
No, we used to have a break for about a quarter of an hour to have a drink of tea, and that was all. Nothing to eat.
Just so literally a tea break?
A tea break, yes.
And then the work outdoors would have to finish at two?
Yes. It was pointless trying to work, because the darkness has to be seen to be believed, because there are no lights, no street lighting, nothing like that. It was right down to the bare nature, and it was really dark, very dark.
So what would you do after that? That was two. You'd come back indoors. What would you do then?
Well, the men usually had their meal, and it was left to their own devices after that. There was nothing we could do, and there was nothing we could offer.
So what was discipline? I mean, sometimes with the British troops, if there's nothing much for them to do, and they get a bit bored and restless, was discipline a problem, either with fighting amongst the men, or even some indiscipline towards you and your NCOs?
No, we didn't experience any, fortunately. I can't recall any incident which caused trouble. They were very well behaved, and I had no complaints whatever.
Did you try and organise things for them to do, or...?
Well, we couldn't really do much. They used to use this little recreation hut. Most of them went there. Some of them wrote letters home. Some read books, magazines, papers. And that's all there was to offer.
Well, now, it's quite an impressive country, I understand, scenery-wise. Were the men able to get out during the daylight hours ever to sort of on expeditions to various things?
No, we hadn't. I'm afraid we hadn't time to give any leisure time to wandering about, seeing the countryside. It was simply work, play and sleep. That was all they could do during the day.
Now, how long did this period last for you? You got there in September. How long were you on this rather dull routine?
As I recall, we were there. In actual fact, we moved after a visit by our general, who...
Would that be Curtis?
General Curtis.
That's from 49th Div, the divisional general.
Yes.
Now, when did he visit, do you know, roughly?
He came, as I recall, about the 1st of December.
So after about three months.
Yes.
What was the purpose of his visit, and what did he do when he...
Well, he was obviously coming around examining the situation from a security point of view, and it became obvious to him that we were badly placed and would be far better to move across the fjord.
What was wrong with your position then, do you think?
We were too far inland. We were actually about 5 or 6 miles down the fjord, and he obviously felt we should be nearer the entrance to the fjord following the line of the coast. So we moved across into this large building, which actually had central heating.
That's the Recuscoli school building that you mentioned earlier.
Yes, that's the one.
And where the guns were.
Yes.
The guns were still unmanned at that point, were they?
At that point they were, yes.
I believe you actually made a sauna room using a hot spring lug. Could you tell me what that was?
Well, it so happened that there was a small geyser situated just about 50 feet away from the building. And this had been converted by Swedish engineers and used to heat a swimming pool in the school building. I got the idea that I could build a sauna room using the same small geyser. And this I did. Then I discovered the big problem was the soldiers would use it in the morning, and it took quite a bit of difficulty to get them back onto the job. The sauna was very attractive, and the normal way of using a sauna is that you have your sauna bath and then roll in the snow, which is very invigorating in a climate like that.
You actually did that, did you?
Yes, I tried it out myself. That it was wonderful, really.
Saunas were new thing. I mean, there are quite a lot about now, but that would be a new thing then, wouldn't it?
Oh, it was. Although I understand there was one in the capital, in Reykjavik, but I don't think there was one anywhere else on the island, such as the one we did.
Now, what about, did you set up a system of defences around the school as you had around the airstrip?
Yes. I set about then doing the usual type of defensive trenches and pillboxes, which were facing towards the sea entrance of the fjord. This took up quite a bit of time, and during this time we had a troop of 25-pounder artillerymen arrived with a second lieutenant, and they also were sighting their guns towards the entrance to the fjord.
So the 4-inch guns were still unused?
Still unused at that time, yes.
A second lieutenant, that would he be under you?
Yes.
He'd be under your command then?
Yes.
How did they fit in with you?
Oh, very well indeed. They were all part of our brigade, and we had met on previous occasions. And they settled into our building and carried out duties, same as my troops were doing. And all in all, it was a very happy situation.
Did you lay barbed wire out? Did you have that sort of defensive or mines or anything?
No, we didn't have, at that time we didn't have barbed wire, but a section of RAs were there, actually to enlarge the situation by building Nissen huts. I had a section of Marines, I think there were 8, who laid a minefield across the fjord.
Naval mines?
Yes, they were naval personnel, yes. And this helped, of course, tremendously in the defensive program and fitted in very well indeed. It was building up to be quite a strong point on this fjord. As far as I could gather, the fear by the authorities were that any German proposed landing would, by coming down this particular fjord, could almost cut the island in half and attack Reykjavik from the rear. So it was naturally important that everything should be done to stop any kind of attack from the sea down this fjord.
So you were setting up quite a defensive little complex at Rekiskoli.
Yes.
Did you have any problems with health with the troops? I mean, it's a fairly restricted diet and not much exercise.
Indeed. Yes, I only had one occasion, and this was on a very dark night. One of the troops came to me and said that a man was ill in one of the Nissen huts, and could I go and see him? This I did, and it was extremely dark. And I got a lamp, went across towards this hut, and found the man, and diagnosed that he was suffering from pneumonia.